Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Data centers have been with us for years, ever since the dawn of the so-called big data era. But today, those centers are proliferating as the demand for cloud storage, cloud computing, and artificial intelligence continues to grow. Data centers are, in the most simplistic of definitions, large buildings containing huge numbers of servers that process a never-ending stream of information. They are the backbone of our digital world and needed to keep websites and digital apps running around the clock. The Charlotte area has been home to many of these centers, and now more have arrived or are on the drawing boards. Sometimes local communities welcome them, sometimes, as was the case in Matthews and Mooresville, locals reject them, worrying about the noise they create and the power and water they consume. In towns west of Charlotte, once home to furniture and textile mills, data centers are transforming those communities as they host facilities for some of the biggest tech companies in the world. Data centers are a fact of modern life. But what about the drawbacks, and do the benefits outweigh them? We look into that this hour. Rob Cox is Executive Director of the Energy Production and Infrastructure Center, EPIC, at UNC Charlotte. He's here along with Scott Millar, President of the Catawba County Economic Development Corporation, and Nick Jimenez is Senior Attorney at the Southern Environmental Law Center. Good morning, everybody. Thank you for being here. Welcome.
Good morning.
So, Nick, I'm going to start with you some really elementary questions for a cogent definition of what data centers are, why we need them, why they are proliferating.
Yeah, well, it's great to be here. I think you hit the nail on the head with your description at the top. Data centers are essentially giant boxes full of servers that are handling data and processing transactions on the internet for a lot of our day-to-day activities. And we need them for those day-to-day activities, whether it's watching Netflix or buying a Starbucks in the morning and tapping your credit card or asking ChatGPT what the best Starbucks flavor this fall is.
Or as we found out last week when the Amazon data servers went down, you couldn't play Wordle. And that was a tragedy. So all those things are going through these data centers all the time, every minute of every day. Why do we need so many of them? Another, are they redundant around the country so that if something is happening and you can't get to the server in, downtown Charlotte, it goes to Hickory? How does that work?
Yes, they are. There are redundant data centers. We all expect essentially 100% uptime from these services. We don't want that gap in Wordle. We need the credit card transaction to go through right away. God forbid, Game of Thrones or something is not available for a minute. So you need that backup. But I think a lot of the proliferation is the generative AI in the modern era that you've seen, because training those generative AI models, the ChatGPT or Gemini or Claude, that will give you a kind of written answer to some question. That whole new level just takes vastly more processing than the Netflix type kind of running a hard drive to spit out the data that is just stored somewhere.
Yeah. So Scott, go ahead. So go ahead.
Mike, I was going to add. One of the things that you see nowadays is most of the new data centers that are built, I always say they're for storing grandma's pictures. At some level, because that's what a lot of it is right now, is Google and Netflix, where you're storing data. It's just beginning now to shift into that AI phase. There really hasn't been a whole lot of the build out of that yet. That's just really beginning, and it's going to flip in terms of where everything is at right now in terms of storage over to AI.
So if you're using Google Drive or OneDrive, or you're using Dropbox, that's the cloud, and that's where all that stuff is going.
Correct. There's storage, and then there's also the cloud computing, which is to say that a lot of folks nowadays are using their Microsoft Office applications in the cloud. right?
Right.
So a lot of that is there. And then as well, applications like Netflix and whatnot that Nick talked about. But the AI build out hasn't really hit us as much as it's about to over the course of the next 5 to 10 years.
And that's
It's
going to require
definitely.
exponentially more computer power. Earlier this fall, there were five data centers, Scott, planned or in the process of seeking approval around the Charlotte region, in West Charlotte at the University City, in Matthews, in Mooresville, Statesville. Some of them were rejected or withdrawn. And there has been some concern about in some sectors about all of these data centers. On the other hand, your county, Catawba County, has been actively recruiting data centers since 2006. You are the home to centers for some of the largest technology companies in the world, as I said, Apple, Google, Facebook, Microsoft. Microsoft is coming, although they have delayed their arrival. And you've been nicknamed the birthplace of North Carolina Data Center Corridor. You see this as a plus. Why?
Well, certainly back in 2006, a data center was a different animal than it's potentially what Rob was talking about today. Back then, it was for storage of grandma's photographs and Bed Bath & Beyond's customer data and those sorts of things. And then the advent of cloud computing came on. And that's really what Apple and what we feel like Microsoft is going to be accomplishing here, more so than the AI-oriented, unknown, so to speak, that the new development opportunities that are being talked about are. So stepping back in time, looking at the development of those opportunities, we've been trying to sort of round out our economic balance, our portfolio, so to speak, for investments here in the county. And so you want furniture, you want textiles, you want advanced manufacturing, you want Corning, you want Apple and others to be participants in broadening this tax base. And that has very much happened here in Catawba County. If you look at the advantages to the town of Maiden, very tiny little town that recruited Apple in 2008, their tax rate has gone down for everybody in the city as a result of the net income that came in as a result after incentives as a result of Apple coming to town. They've built a new two new fire stations. They've built a new police station. They've built a new city hall. They've built a new community center. And while, yes, there were other industries that grew during this period of time, yet a lot of that was due to the impact of Apple being in town. And so
And we
the
also know years ago, your area suffered a great deal of pain as textile mills and furniture
Oh, yeah.
manufacturers began to shut down. And that resulted in a tremendous number of skilled but unemployed workers. Have these centers proven to hire any of those, after retraining, any of those skilled unemployed workers, a substantial number of them?
I wouldn't say that that's the case. I mean, a lot of these folks have either brought in folks that are really technically oriented. They tend to be very high salaries. Apple has 400 people on location pretty frequently. And so they've been there for 15 years now, believe it or not. And it has employed a lot of opportunities. But as far as past furniture workers or past textile workers, probably not so much, but it hasn't been a drain on our other company ability to recruit people either.
Well, let me ask you this then. If these centers come in and they bring some of their own people, and they're obviously going to make a decent amount of money, these individuals, even though they're not that many, not as many as maybe worked in a furniture factory or in a textile mill, and they're bringing a lot of tax dollars in, which have lowered the property taxes for those other people living there, are the people who have been left behind by this still suffering? Are they? Is it suffering even more because we have some high-dollar individuals now that are rising, kicking up the price of housing and everything else?
No, I don't think they've been left behind because certainly those opportunities, those jobs have been filled, those positions have been filled by other companies' needs. So the overall economy has picked up. It's been very positive economically for us. And certainly it hadn't come without a few costs. I mean, you've got some costs for these types of centers, which I'm sure we will be getting into.
Yeah. Rob, North Carolina evidently is one of the more attractive places around the country to locate these data centers. At least we're becoming one of those attractive places. Why? What is it about our state?
Well, one of the attractive things, really, for any large customers to come to North Carolina is that we have pretty affordable electricity rates relative to a lot of the rest of the country. Much more so for these large customers. There's obviously a huge boom in these data centers, but there's actually North Carolina is one of the top areas. So actually, Texas and Virginia actually are the two big ones. It's not totally relevant to us, but what there's Loudoun County, Virginia, near Reston, Virginia, something like 75% of all the internet traffic in the world runs through there.
Yeah.
And there's a legacy story to that. And so there's actually quite a bit of build out in Texas and Virginia because of just how much infrastructure is there to construct them, how much expertise is already there in the region. And given our favorable electricity costs, North Carolina is another area, but from just the perspective of load growth, so I mean I think about the electric grid on a regular basis. I mean we're seeing tremendous load growth in North Carolina, so tremendous connection of new loads. Data centers is just one component of it, but we're seeing a lot of industrial loads that are coming on, as well as a lot of new residential build out that's causing a lot of that as well.
Loudoun County, Virginia, and Reston are the DC suburbs, and they've already had a great deal of electrical infrastructure up there for years because of the federal government. Nick, you wanted to jump in here on this.
Just to add to what Rob said, the Virginia context is informative. I think Loudoun County, SELC, some of our folks and the clients we work with up there do tours of how that is just completely covered with data centers. And for better or worse, I think there's a lot of tax base that goes with that, as Scott was talking about. But the utilities up there, they've drawn so much power that the utilities have said we can't take any more right now. And so another thing you're seeing is that Virginia, at least in the very near term, is kind of full. And so in addition to the relatively low rates in North Carolina, potentially relatively cheap land and access to fiber, I mean, those are the kind of three main things that data center developers are looking for. We've got a pretty good pitch.
I want to come back to something you said, Rob, a second ago, that in North Carolina we have relatively low electric rates, and we do in comparison to other states like California and places like that. I'm wondering why our rates are substantially lower and what is the impact of these data centers coming in, because that's one of the concerns, that they raise rates for everybody.
Correct. And that's a complicated question in terms of how what's driving rates to go up. In North Carolina, I mean, we've traditionally relied very heavily on nuclear. That's a big part of the reason. So if you look at the cheapest parts of the country, up in the Pacific Northwest where it's hydro, right? Water is free, basically. Nuclear is free once you've built it, right? And so there's not and I say not free, but it's very cheap once it's up and running relative to other sources, right? And so there's a favorability to what we have. And of course, we've also had pretty favorable build out of renewables over the last several years as well here in North Carolina. And that's helped as well.
We have to take a break. We'll come back with more in just a moment. We're talking about data centers and their proliferation in areas around Charlotte on Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Support comes from WFAE listeners and Habitat Charlotte Region. Since 1983, Habitat Charlotte Region has partnered with more than 5,000 families through financial education, home ownership, and critical home repair. More information at habitatcharlotteregion.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on Listener Funded, 90.7 WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about data centers. They're coming. They're here. They're coming. More are coming, I should say. Rob Cox is joining us. He's Executive Director of Energy Production and the Energy Production and Infrastructure Center at the UNC Charlotte. Scott Millar is President of Catawba County Economic Development Corporation. And Nick Jimenez is a Senior Attorney with the Southern Environmental Law Center. Speaking of which, Nick, what are your organization's biggest concerns about how data centers are being proposed, developed, and located in this state?
So, Mike, you read my mind. I wanted to piggyback on what Rob was talking about before the break. I think our top line concerns are two sides of the same coin related to the methane generation gas build out that is directly tied to these data centers. So on one side of that coin is cost. We do see a very significant risk that the rest of us, North Carolina customers, will have to pay for the new generating facilities and other grid infrastructure that's needed to serve these large loads. And there's a lot of that. And when you look at Duke's long-term resource plan, you can see that, and its updates on large load customers that are coming to the region, you can see that it's pretty directly tied. The other side of that, of course, is the climate risk of a bunch of methane generation, the methane leakage, the carbon emissions. We have a state law requirement still to get to net zero emissions from the grid by 2050. And this boom in methane generation will put that at greater risk.
And to be clear, this methane generation is coming from what? Natural gas power plants?
Those are synonymous, methane and natural gas in my world.
Okay. In places, Rob, where data centers have been proposed or realized, some complain about the noise. How much noise do they generate? Why are they generating all this noise? Can it be controlled? And if they promise they'll only generate a certain number of decibels and then they go over that, once it's up and running, can anything be done?
Well, there's different reasons for that. You know, a lot of it is the cooling equipment that is there, that is needed to cool the chips inside of these places. All right. There's a lot of chilling, and whatnot that's required for that. As well as potentially a lot of on-site generation. We can talk a little bit about that here. But you know, I would tell your listeners to take a look at the Colossus Data Center. I'm sure Nick is aware of that. It's in Memphis, Tennessee. It was built by XAI, which is Elon Musk's company. And I think what's instructive about it, you know, is classic sort of Elon Musk, right? He built the data center, I think it's something like 150 days or something like that to build out this data center. And I'm not sure of the total capacity. It's over 100 megawatts, but it was going to take TVA a couple of years to be able to connect them to the grid. I think it was about 2 years is what they said over time. And this is a story that's pretty common right now. He basically brought in effectively a bunch of his own gas generation to be able to power it, put it in the parking lot. And over time, he's been decreasing that as they've been able to bring in Tesla batteries and whatnot. But that's going to, there's a lot of issues with that. Nick is probably well tuned in, I suspect, to a lot of this stuff, right? Because my understanding is that Elon Musk just pays the fines every day that he gets from the EPA. From the emissions that are coming out, so
and that is the that is the concern that there is no accountability because they just find ways around it.
They find ways around it. That's right.
I want to talk about water because there are water concerns, but first let's talk about power consumption because, as you just mentioned, Rob, Elon Musk wasn't getting the power he needed in Tennessee, so he built his own power plant, essentially. How much power does an average data center consume?
Well, they've been going up. I mean, nowadays the biggest ones are probably on the order of, you know, 100, 200 megawatts. The newest ones they're talking about for AI are on the order of a gigawatt.
What does that mean?
Yeah, to give you a sense of that, the way I think about this is New York City at peak is about 10 gigawatts. So you're talking at a gigawatt, you're talking about 10% of New York City at its peak demand on a hot summer day. So it's pretty significant.
And Duke Energy, Nick, predicts a 30% increase in demand on its grid between 2024 and 2038, with a significant portion of that demand coming from data centers in places where these data centers have already proliferated and where people have expressed some concerns about them. Are those concerns primarily environmental? Are they economic? Are they because of stress on the power grid, Nick?
Short answer is yes, I think.
To all three.
Yes, sir. So in terms of environmental concerns, I think Rob hit the nail on the head with the backup generation. Often it's backup generation. In the case of Colossus, I think it was just generation, these unpermitted generators. And just to add to that, I mean, you can add a bunch of 2 or 3 megawatt gas turbines and get to 100 megawatts. But the ones that they do, the ones that you can deploy quickly and kind of stack up, they're very inefficient. And so they tend to have a lot higher air emissions than what you're going to see from even one of the, you know, large combined cycle generators that Duke would put online. So the local folks, I think, are right to be concerned about, you know, gosh, all of these kind of fumes are coming out, in that case, completely unpermitted. And sometimes they're even diesel generators, I mean, depending on the data center developer. Concerns from other folks, you know, I've referenced the tours that they do in Loudoun County, some of the community groups. They're very upset. I think part of it, in addition to air, is the water use. Depending on how the cooling is done, there can be, you know, if it's closed loop, they're not going to use so much water. But if it's a once through cooling where you're drawing a bunch of water and then spitting it out pretty hot, Rob would be better to talk to that. But that's not ideal. And I think part of it is aesthetic. It's just it's seeing what used to be, in some cases, a kind of bucolic community with a lot of big boxes.
So let me talk to Scott about this, because up in Catawba County, they have experience with this. How many data centers are at home in your county?
Well, Apple has their primary facilities here operating and has been operating for many years. That's, I think, what we've got to talk about is responsibility. And certainly when we were talking about Colossus, and we're talking about also the opportunities that AI has sort of brought into focus, because the development community suddenly realizes that there's millions or billions of dollars worth of opportunity out there. And, you know, so they are trying to position themselves in order to take advantage of AI, whoever that last operator is going to be. So in Catawba County, we recruited the end user, Apple in this case, and Microsoft, as the user that's a responsible company that's going to be saying, all right, we're responsible for the noise on the site. We're responsible for any groundwater issues or those sorts of issues. And but the other, and some communities around Charlotte have been talking with the developer group, not the end user group. And so it's really hard to get a commitment from a developer as to who that end user is going to be and what their requirements are going to be, or at the property line, our foot candles of light are going to be X, or our dBs of sound are going to be below X. Whereas the development community is just scrambling, saying, hey, there's a transmission line, let's build a site there, and then we'll find a user that's responsible later. But that's where some of the issue, I think, is occurring with some of these communities.
Nick wants to jump in here, but before we do that, I'd like to hear from you, Scott, about have there been complaints around the Apple Center from residents who live around that center about the noise? Has there been any change in Europe, in the, I guess, Duke Energy's up in there, their capacity to deliver power both to that data center and to customers who have been online for years? And has there been any increase in the amount of that ratepayers are paying?
Of course, I'll address that last part first. There's no localized increase as a result of a data center. So I think there's fear in communities that a data center comes in next door and suddenly my power at my house next door goes up. That's not the way it works in a regulated utility such as this. Certainly, there have been some issues over the 15 years that Apple has been there. Construction, for example, is always a problem. You get red clay on mud and mud on roads. You've got noise. You've got new neighbors. You know, you've got some noise, and that's been moderated over the years, some by buying up neighbors and some by just better procedures. So, yeah, I think anytime you have different types of uses that are neighboring, you're always going to have some development issues. But certainly the level of discussion we're talking about with an AI type of center, which is maybe 600,000 square foot footprint, as opposed to a cloud-based center, which is going to be 220,000, 250,000 square feet. You've got many, many degrees of separation between those two.
Nick.
Yeah, I think Scott hits on a really important point that I wanted to elaborate a little bit, which is the difference between the data center developers and those end users that are the household names, the Google, Apple, Meta. There are a lot of data center developers. So when your data center is coming to town, sometimes there's a named company, a Microsoft behind it, and those companies are concerned about their reputation. Data center developers, on the other hand, they can be better or worse, but they don't have the same reputation. They don't. Some of them are, frankly, rather fly by night. And the way we see that showing up is, you know, in my world, is in the projections for energy demand. It makes it really difficult to tell who is putting in a kind of essentially speculating on real estate, saying there's a plot of land here that's relatively cheap. I think I can connect to the grid. I'm going to say I need 100 megawatts here, and that goes into the utilities plan, and then potentially we build gas, you know, turbines to meet it, and then that data center developer says, oh wait, actually TVA is going to give me a better deal, and then we've built this thing that we all need to pay for that we don't need. So I think you know, this gets to the concern about transparency, and you know, I see you want to jump in, Mike. Go ahead.
No, it's okay. Well, we've been talking for years about our aging electric grid around the country and how it has not kept up with the demand for electricity and the growth in the population, et cetera. And now we have these data centers, and as AI becomes more important in the world and more prolific, they consume exponentially more power. So could this help pay for, Rob, a modernization of the grid, or is it simply going to add to the load and we are going to have to find a way to keep up at our expense?
Oh, that's a great question. Yeah, that's a big question. There's a lot associated with that over all of this. One thing, it's, you know, over the last 20 years before this, right, what we were seeing is, I call it kind of the efficiency era. I mean, there was still load being added, but we were adding more efficient load, and we were replacing older load. So LEDs and CFLs and all of that came along over the course of the last 20 years. And, you know, that, I think in a lot of ways, gave us the hope that we could begin this full transition away from what we had been using. And I think that's going to slow and that's going to change a little bit. I'm not saying it's going away. I think it's going to continue that transition, but it's going to change how it occurs. One thing I think it's going to be pretty unique about a lot of these large loads is that they're going to be hybrid. They're going to be sort of a combination of load and generation that are going to come together. And that...
Explain that. Explain.
Well, so that means that behind the meter, there's effectively going to be a gas turbine or something, or batteries, or even nuclear power plants that these guys own. If you look at all the hyperscalers out there, the AWS, Microsoft, these guys are all making investments in nuclear power right now. And what they're going to do is they're talking about locating those behind the meter and basically having those as part of their system. If you look at a lot of the data centers that are being built in other parts of the country, I mean, they're really looking at how they co-locate them with gas pipelines, actually. To be able to get easy access into gas.
And that's the fear, Nick, that this is going to lead to the expansion of electric generating plants that are fossil fuel powered as opposed to clean energy from wind and solar and water and even nuclear. Is that going to be the case in North Carolina?
Well, unfortunately, that's the plan as it stands. I wanted to follow up first on your question about can we use this to pay for a modernized grid? Because we asked the North Carolina Utilities Commission to hold a technical conference on this question of large load additions. What are we going to do about it? And they had a bunch of technical presenters, including one from the what's called the Data Center Coalition, just what it sounds like, kind of a trade group of them. And in so many words, he said, yes, please use us to pay for modernizing the grid. So I think there is an opportunity there. But yeah, we're seeing a build out that's directly tied to the data center load. You know, so Duke does this long-term resources plan. It looks out 15 years, now out to 2050. What do we need to build? What are we going to retire? You know, an aging coal plant that's not really worth fixing anymore. And what do we need to build to meet growing load? And last time around, it had to do an update in the middle of the cycle saying, oh my God, we think we have 4 gigawatts of additional load coming from these large load customers. That's on a roughly 40 gigawatt system. It's a huge amount of load in 10 years. The commission, so they redid their plan and everything. And then the commission said, well, okay, you know, that's fine, but please start giving us updates. It's more than a please. You have to start giving us updates on what's coming. The last update, it was 6 gigawatts. And so that's in the new plan that's coming around. And when you match that up with the load growth in the coming 10 years, it's a lot of it. It's like most of it.
Which takes me back to Virginia. Virginia's home to 13% of the world's data center capacity, and their main utility company, Dominion, is contracted to build 40 gigawatts of new energy capacity for these centers, nearly three times that state's current maximum power production. And this is not for the whole state. This is for one single industry, which is unprecedented, according to them. But it will cause growth in their generating capacity. So is, Rob, that a good thing? I know that they're maxed out at the moment. Is that the downside, or are there other downsides to this?
Well, yeah, and to put that in context, I think you talked earlier, Mike said that there's it's about 30% growth in Duke in their system. I think it's mm-hmm. roughly about 100% growth in the Dominion system, which is incredible over the course of 10 years. There's some differences between the markets up in Virginia than there is here, and we can get into that, but you probably heard some of electricity costs going up in what's called PJM, which is the market that runs the grid to the north of us. They're going to have some struggles up there as they build out new generation for sure because of the way their market is set up. That will be far more challenging on prices than we have here in the Carolinas. There is a tremendous, I think we're all trying to understand this right now too. We can get more into this perhaps after the break, but there's been some new rules that are starting to come out too about trying to speed out some of this buildup from the federal government as well.
Okay, we'll talk about that. We'll talk about other concerns like water and land use and transparency, which has already come up in this conversation, when we come back.
Support comes from WFAE listeners and the Gambrill Center at Queens, presenting Earthwise, a public series exploring our connection to nature through science, film, art, literature, and lived stories, part of their Connected Campus program. More at gambrillcenter.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about data centers, their proliferation around the state, around the country, and their need for power and the concerns surrounding them. Nick Jimenez is with us. He's a senior attorney at the Southern Environmental Law Center. Scott Millar is president of the Catawba County Economic Development Corporation. They are already home to some of the world's biggest companies and their data centers. And Rob Cox is here, executive director of the Energy Production and Infrastructure Center, EPIC, at UNC Charlotte. I keep asking Rob questions that he cannot answer in the time allotted going up to the break, so I'm going to let you finish your response to my previous question. You were talking about new rules coming into place to govern some of these concerns.
Well, one of the things that just came out at the end of last week, and I think probably folks are starting to try to figure out exactly what it means, but the Secretary of Energy came out with a proposal for a rule. He wants the federal government to take over the interconnection process for loads larger than 20 megawatts and expedite that process because it takes a lot. I mean, I gave that example earlier of how long it took for Elon to build his data center versus how long it took TVA to power it. And they see that as a concern. And they will give priority if you are a hybrid data center, which or a hybrid load, which means that you have load plus your own generation. I can imagine that Nick is probably his group is probably trying to unpack what that all means. But effectively, they are trying to make it faster to get these things on the grid and to create a standardized process nationwide, because the processes are different state by state. Nick, you probably have all sorts of thoughts on that, or maybe you're still trying to figure out what that all means.
Oh, thanks. We're still digesting that, to be sure. But I was pleased to see the preference for I call it co-location of load and generation. Because a lot of these data center developers, the named, to distinguish the data center owners from the developers, the name brand owners like a Google or a Meta still have significant climate goals. And they're doing, you know, behind the meter generation that is zero emission. They're working on, as Rob said, new types of nuclear, new types of geothermal generation. So I see that as pretty promising.
Scott, because you are home to all these data centers in your part of the state, and you were an industrial hub for furniture and textile manufacturing, was much of the electrical infrastructure or the water infrastructure already in place? I know these centers probably use far more power than a factory used, but nonetheless, was a lot of this already in place? And that makes you more attractive.
That's why we got started with this opportunity years ago, was the legacy infrastructure that was in place, both electrical, water, and sewer, to support these primarily textile facilities that were around, and the fact that we'd lost all these jobs and investment because of the, globalization, so to speak. And so the concept was to come find something new. And we did that. The towns and cities throughout Duke's territory and anyway, the textile opportunities, they were sort of, we've got the ability to handle water. We've got the ability to handle sewer. And so it was a perfect marriage between those. I think in some communities across the United States, you see pictures of landowners next door to a Meta facility in Atlanta and folks that their groundwater is being impacted. Well, the reality is that at least in our neighborhoods, the water, sewer, and those sorts of things are handled on municipal systems as opposed to groundwater systems. And so it's not exactly the same problem, although it certainly, if it's impacting somebody, somebody's well water, that's an issue for those people. But it doesn't seem to be much of a North Carolina problem anyway.
I do want to talk about that. And I know that during the heyday of textile manufacturing, one of the concerns with water was the fact that when you dye fabric, some of that dye it leaches into the wastewater. But there are other concerns about wastewater with regard to these data centers, which we'll get to in a moment. But water is an environmental concern, Nick. U.S. Data centers consumed over 17 billion, with a B, gallons of water in 2023 for cooling alone. And that number is expected to double or quadruple by 2028, which is 2 years from now. And right now, 211 billion more gallons were used to generate the electricity to power these data centers. So what's the water for? Why isn't it always closed loop like it is in a nuclear reactor? Why do they have to bring water in and dump it out? Why can't they just circulate it?
A lot of questions there. I'm not a water lawyer, but I will do my best. It's for cooling. And the short version of the reason that it's not always closed loop, in my understanding, is cost. When you make a closed loop system, you need the whole other place where all the water sits to cool off until you can use it for cooling again. And it's cheaper just to bring in cool water and let it flow out. North Carolina, we're lucky to be a relatively water-rich state. We have pretty good rainfall here, but we do have droughts. And so I think that's a legitimate concern if they're not using closed loop. And I think it's because, the biggest
because I was told that, they use about 300,000 gallons of water a day, which is equivalent to the usage of 1,000 homes.
It can be massive. It can be massive. I think the greatest concern I would have is in places where the water they're drawing is from groundwater, and then they're putting it out into into a stream when they discharge it, or a river or other water body, because then you do see the groundwater levels lowering, people's wells going dry. It can definitely happen.
And they're sucking all this water in for cooling purposes, and when they spit it out, many times it's salty water, and that's a problem. So if you're taking so much water in and taking and putting out essentially polluted water, that must be an incredible stress on local water supplies, is it?
Might get a little beyond me.
Okay.
I'm going to go from the experience that I've had with Apple, for example, and it's my understanding that they recirculate each gallon of water 37 times before it's released. It might go back to that same concept of responsibility. And so is the end user responsible for the outcome?
Yeah, a lot of it's going to come back to responsibility. Ahead. Yeah, I mean, I think.
To be responsible, does it have to be written into the regulations, into the laws, or can we expect these companies to be responsible? Rob.
Well, there's differences there. And I think, we talked about that a little bit. I mean, it probably is best that ultimately becomes part of regulation, but certainly the larger companies that Scott's dealing with that have those goals are doing more of that. I think it's when some of these developers come in, there's a different mindset there. They're looking to build cheap, and not necessarily because they have some sort of ESG goals that they're trying to worry about.
So when a developer comes in and builds a facility that is then used by a major company or several major companies, is it the developer that is on the hook for how those centers are operated once they're once they're working, or is it the Apples and the Microsofts of the world that are responsible?
Understanding is that it's kind of a build transfer situation. So the developers are essentially creating a large box with a giant power hookup and then selling it for a lot more money. And so it's going to be the new owner, the Apple, the Meta, that's going to be on the hook for that.
So Scott, the salinity of the wastewater that comes, I'm not sure why it produces saline coated water, but we can talk about that, I suppose, but it has been known to result in failing wells. And the use of so much water in these centers has also resulted in reduced water pressure in some areas, even sediment in tap water in some cases, with odor and taste that is no longer acceptable to drink. Talk about your experience in Catawba County.
Ours has all gone through municipal systems, and so it hasn't had that same impact that you're referencing. So I wouldn't say that here we've had that, but Nick, are you raised your hand?
Yeah, I'm struggling also to figure out where the salinity would come from. I can't think of something in a cooling process that would cause that. To my mind, it would probably be from a groundwater withdrawal. Like if they're drawing water that has natural salinity from rocks, and then they're putting that out into a surface water, that would be a problem. That would be a problem. I mean, you have all sorts of critters in there that are accustomed to fresh water, for example.
Richmond County, which is about 80 miles east of Charlotte, will be the site of a massive Amazon data center that is expected to consume millions of gallons of water a day. And it's going to worsen an already tense water situation in that area. Evidently, they're already experiencing dry wells and poor water quality and discoloration and taste issues with their tap water already. This is before the plant goes in. The argument is that further demand on their already stressed water supply will disproportionately impact Black and Indigenous communities. And one presumes that wherever these centers are located, they are not located in affluent areas of counties or cities. They are located in lower income areas or in rural areas where the income is already low. Is that a concern? Are lawmakers, policymakers taking that into consideration? I'm not sure who to ask that question of.
I'm going to say that that's a little bit sensationalized, at least in our experience. Yes, Catawba County, in some regards, isn't the worst county in the state by any means. And we've had none of those specifics that you're talking about there.
I think the issue, I think, is there are those stories that do stick out. Nick probably is familiar with some of those, but even, you know, the Colossus example that I gave previously, right? That's in a low income area of Memphis. You would imagine if it was an affluent area, they wouldn't bring in a bunch of diesel or a bunch of gas fired generation and just hook it up in the parking lot. So that's, I'm sure that's not the experience that Scott had. I'm sure that's not the experience that most folks have with these things, but we are in a bit of a Wild West situation right now, where some of these guys are trying to move quicker than maybe they should. Right. And I think those are the stories that I think really kind of drive that narrative a lot, I think.
There are also concerns about land use. Around Charlotte, there is a 122-acre, five-building data center being planned for the University City area in West Charlotte off Morse Chapel Road. A 156-acre facility was approved in May. It will span 3 million square feet, making it the state's largest data center. In Statesville, a 350-acre, five-building center was approved despite local opposition and concerns about noise and pollution and traffic and loss of farmland. All of these facilities evidently require land, a lot of acreage. But then so do shopping malls and office parks and factories. Nick, are the concerns over land use for data centers really any different?
In strictly environmental terms, I think they're pretty similar. You're not going to be able to use that land for agricultural purposes or use conservation purposes, anything like that, in the same way that you couldn't use a shopping center. I think the trade-off probably comes from the environmental impacts that we've talked about. If there's dirty generation, if there's excessive water use. And then in people's lived experience of being in that area, I think is where it really shows, which is not a strictly environmental concern. But when you have a data center, it sounds like Scott's experience is a little different, more employees in the Apple center. But from what I understand, there generally aren't that many employees. So you have a giant, essentially a warehouse taking up all of this land with nobody around. And so if you live near there, it can feel a little unappealing.
There are also transparency concerns because we don't necessarily know when these developers come in and build a facility. We don't know who's ultimately going to use them or how it's going to work or how much power they're going to use or how much water they're going to use. And there are these transparency concerns about power demands. And the concerns are that we need to know so that the energy companies don't overbuild or underbuild. At a recent meeting of energy experts in Raleigh, Lucas Fikes, energy policy director of the Data Center Coalition, touted the economic positives of these operations, but also suggested that utilities and state regulators should review companies' histories to see if they have a track record of delivering on past projects, and that the, quote, Utilities Commission should be required to publicly disclose the key assumption, data sources, and validation processes underlying their forecasts. Rob, is that happening in North Carolina?
Well, it's happened across the country. I mean, one of the problems that you can look at forecasts on sort of growth of load throughout the country. And I think it's common that these guys will put in requests in different parts of the country. And so it's difficult to forecast the load growth because they might have put an application in North Carolina and Texas and Georgia, and they're going to see which one gives them power fastest. And we mentioned about how the DOE is trying to push forward with some standardized processes and have the federal government take over. That may very well help that process, right? Because that will create a more transparent process and streamline things so that there is not a competition for these. But part of the reason why those load forecasts are hard to figure out is because you may have one data center in that forecast five times.
NPR reports that as resistance to these centers has mounted nationwide, more projects are being delayed or outright rejected. But at the same time, the use of AI is skyrocketing, urgently increasing the need for more centers, requiring more power, more water, creating more noise, requiring more land. So, Nick, very quickly, is there an alternative to this? Because this is an inevitability.
Is there an alternative to AI or an alternative
to these data centers? They have to come. Otherwise, we'll be left out. They'll build them in China.
Well, that's
correct.
We have
30 seconds.
No, that's correct. I mean, that's the alternative. And I think we probably would prefer that they're built here for any number of reasons. I'm sure we'll do it cleaner, ultimately, than they will over there. And it does provide us the opportunity to modernize our infrastructure for sure. But these data centers are challenging to deal with, and they create all sorts of strains on the power system.
Rob Cox is Executive Director of the Energy Production and Infrastructure Center, EPIC, at UNC Charlotte. Scott Millar is President of the Catawba County Economic Development Corporation, and Nick Jimenez is a Senior Attorney with the Southern Environmental Law Center. Thanks.
Charlotte Talks is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Gabe Altieri. The senior producer is Sarah D'Elia. The producer is Chris Jones. For more information on Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or to subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at mazdaofsouthcharlotte.com.